All right, we're live, everyone. Joe and Mike, buildassetsonline.com. Today, we're going over some dropshipping products that we have sold in the past and made a lot of money with. So these are going to be some of our best-selling dropshipping products from our previous stores.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this will give people an idea of, like, this stuff doesn't have to be crazy complicated. And I mean, I don't know. People will figure it out. So, Joe, close your window. Get your lighting right. I'm using my other camera today, and I think it looks quite good, Joe. We bought these stupid webcams, and they suck. I'm just using the Mac one right now, and it's...
Oh, yeah. That looks a lot better, actually.
Yeah, it looks a lot better. I feel like a real Twitch streamer or something. So, yeah. I guess let's give it a second for people to kind of pop into the stream. I know we're a bit late, and yeah, we'll dive right in. So XYZ said, kindly make a video on how to recover from Google update. My site hit hard. Core plus spam update complete, but traffic still down. We just made two videos about this. So go into our channel, go back to our last two lives. We were going to make another Google video, but we figured the people couldn't handle that. The people didn't want another Google update video because... what else is there to say? We've said really the basis of it, which is you can't be relying on blogs anymore as your main source of income. They're a great little side thing when they, you know, they come in, they make money, whatever. But if your blog takes a 50% hit, you have to be okay with that. So really the most stable way that we've found to write content and make money off of that content is through dropshipping. Plain and simple. It's been the most immune to updates. It has the highest payoff because you're getting in this free traffic and one sale can make you hundreds or thousands of dollars and you're building a real business at the same time. So that's it in a nutshell. Ron LaFrance says hello. So let's just start it off, Joe, and we're going to take it to really where it all started off. So this is going to get a bit nostalgic. The Jesper Office stand-up desk. I still remember the SKU number. It's 205 ESP.
Yeah, well, that's for the espresso color.
Yes, there was the cherry. There was the black. And maybe there was another one. But this is one of the first suppliers we ever secured. And I was just looking it up right now. I mean, their name isn't I think they changed the name of the company. And so I don't know if this product even still exists or what.
I don't think it does. I don't think the name, I mean, I think the product exists. I think the name is different.
Yeah. And I wrote it was about $250. I think, Joe, when we first started selling this, it might have even been $199.
Yeah, definitely $199.
So I stand corrected. It was $199, and our margins on this were pretty good. So I want to give some context here because we get a lot of questions about, like, what a good supplier looks like, and I guess margin and this whole thing. So, like, this company, when we got in with them, Jesper Office, they had a huge variety of office products. And we only chose to list, like, 10 to 20 of their products, including the color variants. So, like, this one had maybe three or four variants. And then maybe we had like four or five other product types from this brand that also had color variants. So it's very interesting that we did that. And again, this was one of the first suppliers we ever got, our first store. We didn't know exactly what we were doing, but yeah, I guess this one wound up being the best seller. And Dade County Local said, not too high ticket. Right, but it was $200, and at the time, I want to say we make at least 40% margin on these. So, number one, the cheaper something is, theoretically, the easier it'll be to sell. There's less friction for somebody to whip out their credit card and buy it. And so, yeah, it wasn't super hard to sell these. You sell one, you know, you get enough money to buy a couple cantaloupes.
Honeydew. I don't like cantaloupe.
I can't figure out the difference. This one's a honeydew?
Yeah, cantaloupe is like orange.
I figured the honeydew should be orange because orange is more close to the color of honey.
Hey, you would think.
Hey. Yeah, so Dade County Local, I'm given a variety of things that we used to sell. And so this would be definitely up there. And also this supplier had a lot of issues. There was a lot of internal strife.
Yeah, this product, Mike, we actually own one, I think, right?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Okay, it's in your house. I don't know where it was at. It's kind of a piece of shit.
I should have cleaned it off and just had it here to demonstrate it.
Can you show it? Is there anything on it? Like, can you?
I gotta like get up. But yeah, there's a bunch of shit on it. I don't feel like.
Okay.
It's gonna be a whole mess.
That's a shame. That's a shame. That would have been good to show.
Would it?
I think so.
Next video. I don't know.
All right.
What is another show? It's a friggin' desk. You can.
Wait a second. I feel like in that basement of yours, you have many of our historic dropshipping products scattered throughout. Am I wrong?
It's like a fucking bow museum in here.
Yeah, you got to do a tour of that because I feel like there's all over.
Well, we're gonna come up on something actually, and I want to get deeper into that. But yeah, this brand had a lot of internal strife that really led to their downfall. So this was really the first kind of bad supplier we ever had. They weren't bad because their margins were okay. But like, yeah, we would send stuff in and then they wouldn't answer us. And then we'd have to call and be like, what the hell's going on? And there was a whole bunch of catty stuff going on in the office. And then eventually I think they changed their name and they tried to
rebrand. He doesn't want me chewing.
Yeah, you're getting inflamed right now.
All right.
I'm trying to just look at the product. They don't want to hear
you. I'm going to mute while I chew. I appreciate that. Listen. All right.
Well, that's really all I have to say about this one. So we'll let Joe chew and we'll move on to the next one. If people have questions about these, then please ask because I don't even know what to say sometimes. Next one here, another product we also do own ourselves, but this one is not in my basement. This is the J&H Lifestyles Joyous Two-Person Sauna. And Joe, I took this picture screenshot straight from Amazon because I wanted to point out two things. Number one, this product was the best-selling sauna on Amazon in its heyday when we were selling it. You're muted. Are you fucking
around? I'm just messing around.
Okay.
Yeah.
And number two, it's not available anymore. I went on the J&H website. They don't even sell this anymore. So J&H sauna here, the Joyous Two-Person Sauna, definitely a product of, what's the word? Biden economics. And
not too familiar with what that means.
I don't know. I see it on freaking X sometimes. I never said it out loud. Whatever. I'm just saying, I think they just couldn't sustain the price point of this, or maybe there's deeper news. But yeah, this would sell at $9.99. And so something we've talked about in the past that I want to bring home with this, we used to talk about how we would have two of the same product, basically. Like, okay, we would sell two different tubs. One was more affordably priced, even though it was lower quality. Another one would be higher priced. We had better margins on it, and I would try to sell it more, but just the lower priced one would historically sell better in our ads. And this is a prime example of that. This was the cheapest two-person sauna, maybe that's the cheapest sauna that was available online. And because of that, it had so much demand. It just performed so well in the marketplace. And that's what people, you know,
I feel like I remember like seeing like four of these come in like an hour once.
Exactly. Another thing. So you look here, I wrote 10% margin. That's true. We would get 10% margin on this product, free shipping. So 10%, you know, whatever. We sold one for $9.99. We'd get 100. It would cost us $900 basically. You know, so if we add a discount on top of that, whatever. Who cares?
Listen. Let me tell you something else. For all of you people out there screaming about the Google update and about you're losing your Amazon affiliate commissions, you're losing your ad commissions. 10% margin is blowing Amazon affiliate or any other sort of physical product affiliate thing completely out of the water. So that's all I have to say. I'm going to go back to chewing now.
Yeah, people are Dade County Local is just flaming us here. He doesn't like the desks were too low ticket, 10% margins too low. And I'm specifically using these examples because of these points. Stuff was low price point. Okay. We still made a good amount of money on it. Like Joe said, these would hit, like, especially when Q4 rolled around and it would get time for holidays, whatever, you'd see multiple come in an hour. And okay, we sell four in an hour. We sell four even in a day. $400 is $400. Nothing to sneeze at. Obviously, you need to make sure that you're running ads and taking into account, okay, you're only making $100 per sale, but
I'm gonna say something with that. People spend so much time analyzing and breaking down and trying to figure out like the downside of selling a product. Like they put so much mental energy into that versus just thinking, I'm building an asset here and I'm going to sell this and I'm going to become financially independent because this upped my total profit for the month. It upped my total profit for the year. And so I'm going to sell this website in a year and I'm going to have a big exit and I'm going to use it to do something that I can never do if I had a real job. People spend so much time analyzing, oh, it's too heavy. It's too low margin. It's going to break, you know? And I feel like that's the difference. It's not just dropshipping, to be honest with you. Every business model that I see, you know, I'm in these random communities for random business models online, and I just see the same chatter in different forms. Like people aren't willing to just throw it all out there and see what happens, but we're willing to do that. I think that's the difference.
I think it does go back to the online asset criteria. And this wasn't even something we understood at the time, really. I think we were just in go, go, go mode. But if you can really understand that what you're doing is going to compound as long as you take consistent action every day, then it's just, you're playing such a better game than being at a job where you got to work for a year, 2 years, and then you get a friggin' 5% pay bump. Or you're doing, low ticket drop shipping where, all right, you get an ad set working and then you get suspended. Your Facebook account gets suspended or, you know, you go viral and then it stops. You got to test out new shit and you're kind of just going back to square one. Joe, you called this, we were the first person to sell this supplier.
Yeah, absolutely. We were. I remember that. They were available nowhere besides for Amazon and their website.
Yeah. So all this talk, oh, is this dropship friendly? Oh, it's on Amazon. Can I sell it? Come on.
Listen. I got one more thing to add here. I made a new, we have a lot of new students coming in and I don't know what the deal is. Maybe they don't watch our free YouTube videos, but I feel like maybe they don't have a good understanding of our philosophy behind all of this. So I feel like they're watching our course videos and they're not fully grasping like how to do the niche research. As a result, this week I came out with what I am confident is the best niche research video for high ticket dropshipping. And I gave it to our new students. I've done it in a way where there's no questions asked. Like you follow this, you will successfully pick a niche. I've narrowed it down. I've dumbed it down. I don't like to use the word dumb, but I distilled it into its perfect essence. It's like an Apple product. Like, That's what I want to say.
Yeah. Very easy to use. Dade County said, I agree with you. Everything you guys are saying, I'm in your course. Yeah, Dade, I'm just messing with you. I think your name starts with a C, right? I know who you are. Hassan said, thoughts on industry cleaning products? I haven't tried to go after them. So,
you know what? Let me say something else. With the new with this new niche research process I made, it basically like eliminates the need to ask these questions. I don't mean to toot my own horn, but I feel like I've come up with something where, you know, I don't have to explain the theory of niche research and looking at the different products and the like all this stuff. Like I've finally narrowed down, I created a process where someone could come in, do the niche research, and have their domain picked in probably like 2 hours, ready to go. Yep. That's it.
That's all I'll say about that, Hassan.
And in terms of what do we think of different products, look at all the different products we've sold. I mean, this is just a little sampling.
Well, I'm gonna take it to this question now too, because I thought you were about to answer, Joe, but you can go back to, you're either tooting or you're chewing. Hassan said, can we compete with 15 sellers of the same product on a 2K branded search supplier? I'll let you answer this, Joe, because you made that video, so I don't want to step on your toes, because I haven't seen that video in full, so I don't want to. I want to keep the message clear.
No, I think you should answer this, because in the video, like, I don't even think you should be looking at that.
Okay.
Like, especially
that's what I was gonna say. So yeah. I didn't. Why can't you compete? I don't know. The answer is yes. Like, just do it. Just do it, and then you'll run ads, and then you start the bids off. If you're scared, start the bids off low. If they don't spend, okay, increase them a little bit. They'll start spending money. And you're going to get some clicks in. Okay, what am I getting clicks for? Are these good clicks? Are they shit? Okay, I'm getting good clicks in for a while. I'm spending some money. Am I getting sales? Am I not getting sales? If I'm not getting sales, why am I not getting sales? Well, so this is something inside of, you know, the coaching program. Obviously, we have detailed methodologies for how to troubleshoot this. But I don't look at branded search. I don't look at branded search volume. You could look at, okay, on Google Shopping, are there 50 people competing on this product? And maybe that's like a red flag. Like, you don't have to, I don't know, maybe skip them or just acquire them and don't go crazy on ads. But there's no answer I can give you that's theoretical. You have to just do it and see what comes back. So that's it.
Mike, one thing that I think is really, really important to understand with this, and this is a realization that I've come to just based on what people have been asking us lately, if they come, because we have a lot of people that come from like the niche site background, the affiliate site background. What you need to understand about Google Ads is that it's not a zero-sum game like SEO. So, for example, if you were doing keyword research for SEO and you wanted to rank for a keyword, say like, I don't know, best VPN or something, or like apple pie, some like crazy ridiculous keyword that there's thousands and thousands of pages on there, odds are you're never going to even get close to the first page. And it's really easy to tell that just based on any third-party metrics or just by looking at the SERP, you'll know that you'll never get page one for something like apple pie in any sort of reasonable amount of time frame. But Google Ads, it's not a zero-sum game. It's an auction system. So you can bid something and say you bid low, and then all the other advertisers run out of their campaign budget for the day. Suddenly you're showing up. So right. It's not like it's like you either show up or you don't. It doesn't work like that. So I think that's something that's very, very important to understand when it comes to evaluating competition by like just looking at whether you're looking at a tool or you're just looking at Google Shopping or like whatever. You know, there's so many unknowns. You don't know that your competitor's campaign budget or all the other stuff they're spending money on.
What they're targeting, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so you could, that's a very, very important distinction that I'm starting to realize people
you know, obviously we know that because we've been doing this for so long, but I think people don't grasp that. And I think it's important that they start to grasp that it's Google Ads is not a zero sum game the way SEO is, where you're either ranking or you're not ranking. It doesn't work right. Like that.
Right. And Google Shopping obviously is going to show you for things that don't even have like search volume, like a lot of one-off stuff. And yeah. So let's move on here. This is one that we don't have in my basement. Though. Well, I wish we did.
We do have the chair.
It's not, yeah. I don't know where that chair is. Do you know where it is?
Yes.
Do you have it?
No, it's in our parents' attic.
It's still there?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a classic one. The focal upright confluence table. So this is a conference table that you can crank over there. You can see that little thing, and you would crank it up or down. And this brand, Focal Upright, again, no longer exists. I don't know if the brand itself, they sold. Here's the story. This company, one of the first brands we got in with, they had a very small product selection, maybe 12 products. They were all like this ergonomic office type stuff. So they had all these standing kind of desks. They had these really ridiculous chairs. These are the least ridiculous of the pack, but they were coming out with some ridiculous things. They had, I should have put it on here, Joe. Do you remember it was called like the Locus or something? And it was the most ridiculous contraption of a chair you could ever imagine.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, yeah, it was kind of like, it was almost like a zero gravity chair or something. Like, but it looked so uncomfortable, to be honest with you. Like the whole trend of working or standing while you're working, I think was really at its peak back then. I used to kind of believe in the message as well, but now I think sitting is the new standing.
Sitting is the new standing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sitting is the new standing. So yeah, I mean, so people would buy these desks. At the very end, I think they were selling for around $1,800. I forget what they were in the beginning. I almost want to say they were like $2,500 per desk. And the big ones would go for maybe even more, like $5,000, you know, when you had like the really large one, or you would add in the chairs because it would be like a package. So yeah, these were crazy. And again, we had crazy margins on these. So I wrote 40 to 55%. That's definitely accurate. I remember specifically at one point it was 55% off and free shipping. And the issue was, I mean, we were more new, so our ads competency wasn't really the way it is now, but this is like something like a conference table is very competitive in terms of just how much a keyword like a click costs. So I was running ads at one point because we were getting sales for like, you know, standing conference table and like stuff like generic type keywords. And we would make so much money on these. I was like, I got to just run ads for these converting generic terms. And we would be spending $8 to $12 per click on a term like that. And, you know, it would come through from time to time. I think also we had issues with like conversion tracking and stuff like that. So it kind of limited us in that regard. And again, the last thing I'll say, it goes back to the price point situation. I think for a conference table, it was quite expensive. So the conversion rate is going to suffer. And I think, you know, based on the spend that we had, like the sales were a little bit more sporadic than I would like, but overall great product. Again, they got sold to a huge company and then they wound up taking away the map. And even after they took away the map, I didn't know for like 6 months, we were still selling them. So that also goes to show, you know, sometimes, I mean, people sell non-map suppliers all the time. We recommend new people not to do it because it's just going to add in extra variables. But I was doing a call with, you know, one of our students, and one of his best suppliers from the year was not a map supplier. So just wanted to throw that out.
Can we get, we have some of these interesting questions here.
Yeah, yeah.
On Ask. Toby W says, tips on getting your collection pages out of the crawled, not indexed yet prison. Are you sure? So when you're looking at your collection pages, are you looking at like the raw URL of it? Because Shopify makes a bunch of like concatenated URLs that will concatenate back to the main URL. So,
what the hell is concatenate?
Let me just find an example. Does it do that with collections? Hold on. I got to look and find an example. Get to the next question real quick.
Well, I wanted to just say hello to Deuce of Growth here. He said facts, and then he said true. So, SHR said, I have a smart home blog that got hit by Core. I now see the light. I want to sell smart home high ticket items. Problem is most smart home stuff is cheap. Having a hard time finding high ticket items. SHR, go to our website, buildassetsonline.com. Book a strategy call with us, and we will show you what needs to be shown. The truth is, there's so many ways to create a high-ticket dropshipping site. And number one, I'd like to see the website you're working with, and potentially maybe there is some crossover. But again, it comes down to you got to know how to do this stuff. Niche selection, product selection, finding products is a bit of a skill. And so, like a lot of the YouTube videos online, they're not going to show you, they're not going to get into the depth of like all the products that there are, especially for smart home stuff. I can think of a bunch of smart things you could fit on a smart home store that aren't cheap. So, and is that even a good idea? So it's like, there's a lot of layers to this, but yeah, why don't you, book a call and then we can discuss more. Do you have an answer for this yet, Joe?
No, I think I made a mistake. I don't think that – I think they only do that for products. For a second, I thought there's like all these – yeah, I don't think Shopify does that for collection pages in terms of the concatenation. They only do that for products. I don't know. I really have to see – it depends on how new your store is, how your internal linking is, what your
I was gonna say, Joe, I don't know shit about this, but would it be an internal linking issue? Because if you just make a collection page, it's not really gonna necessarily be linking back to anything if you don't put it in the header and the navigation menus.
I think it could be more than that because I mean you can get indexed just off your sitemap, like without even having it be like a page that you link to. So I don't know. I'd have to see the site and see exactly what he's talking about.
Is Toby in the group? His name sounds familiar. I don't know.
Yeah. I'd have to actually look at that and see what he's trying to look at and how old his site is and all that kind of thing. Cause I'm noticing, I don't know if this is a symptom of the AI stuff, but I'm finding it more and more difficult. Like unless you have a site that already gets a lot of traffic, you can't just add like Google's going to be slow to index new pages unless you're like adding links or whatever. Like you have to have like a good traffic trajectory growth to get new pages indexed. Like I have one site where we threw 250,000 AI articles on it. They all got indexed pretty much every day, got traffic pretty much instantly. And then I have another domain where I throw like 3,000 AI articles at it and it does, and it basically like does nothing. So it's multifactorial for sure. I think a lot of it has to do with the amount of traffic you're already getting. So that definitely something to consider, but I have to take a closer look.
Deuces said, I was referring to when Joe was saying, stop overthinking and make money instead of trying to break every little detail down. Yeah, I mean, details are important, but I think really action first, figure out the details later.
For sure.
How far are we in this? Okay. I'll just move on to the next one. I'll get to some of these other questions in a second. Next one. Classic. Kegco Kegerator. So there'd be a few different models of these that would be like double wide versions and all sorts of different types, indoor, outdoor. So the price would range anywhere from $800 to $3,000. And the margin would range. So some of these we would kind of get screwed on. Like if it was a big one and it was shipping far, then at the end of the day, we probably wouldn't make a lot on it, you know, like 10% or something. Maybe sometimes less if we really, you know, they use a discount code or something. But at the average, it was still well worth it. And this was another thing, Joe. I think we were among the first dropshippers to really start selling Kegerators.
Yeah. And I don't want people to get discouraged by saying, we said this twice, that we're the first ones to do it. And people might be thinking, oh, well, I'm too late now. One thing I want to say is when I was making this new niche research video yesterday from inside the course, I found so many brands and so many product types that I've never even heard of or seen. And to be honest, I've been on a lot of dropshipping websites. And so, you know, it's amazing how I see new stuff pop up on sites like I haven't been on in like a couple years. And then I see them and then they got new stuff, new brands, stuff I haven't heard of. So,
yeah, I mean, even very closely related to this stuff, there are some products that I never see anybody do. Like maybe I've seen like one site sell it one time and I was like, oh, that looked cool. And I never see any of our students do it. I never see it like blown up like a lot of these different product types like saunas. Like saunas are so just blown up at this point that I don't even care to talk about them. But it's not to say that you can't sell saunas. It's just that, yeah, if you go and you're looking at, you know, Google Shopping and it's just 50 dropshippers you're competing with, you have to reflect that in your bids. And it's not that you'll never sell them or whatever, but you just have to look at the data and go accordingly. Or I'm sure there are sauna brands that not a lot of people have. And that's just always how it's going to be. I think it's just the majority of people that get into this stuff skim off the top and don't put in that extra effort to find like the really good suppliers.
Yeah.
So, Toddy said, would you say a country with 57 million people is a good market? South Africa, to be specific. I mean, Toddy, if you, you know, Google sauna, if you Google any of these products in your home country, are there Google Shopping results popping up? Are there e-commerce stores that are popping up? And if there are, then that means that people are, you know, people are paying to show up in the results. So somebody's clicking on it and somebody's buying it. And even just from your own experience, like, do you buy stuff online from e-commerce stores? So you would know better than us, I suppose. Kim L, what's the minimum I should spend on ads when starting off? I don't think I have an answer to this. I mean, you can't spend $20 and then just throw it all away when it doesn't work. I think the answer is just start out spending maybe $10 a day, $20 a day. And I mean, listen, if you can't sustain that for a month, 2 months, then you're doing the wrong thing. You got to like get a job or something to like actually get some money and have some savings so that if you spend, you know, $600, $1,000 in ads, you're not going to lose your shirt. So, yeah, I think if you spend $1,000 and you're not getting sales, something is wrong. whether it's your ads, how you're running the ads, your product page, like you should have sales within that point. And Google gives you a free $500 when you spend $500. So really, yeah, you spend your $500, Google gives you the free $500. If you're not getting sales back within that point, there's a big issue you need to address. What are the best / top niches to get in for 2023? All of them. All of them. People have to get out of this mindset that there's like these best top niches. I'm showing you a bunch of different examples of products that are, I don't know if they're common, if they're not common, but like we were selling a friggin' desk. We were selling chairs. You know? Like, don't overthink this stuff. Toby, also Joe, please, can you go through a brief timeline of getting your store from zero domain authority to something decent around 30 or so?
Well, I feel like, so I've been kind of grappling with this myself of developing a efficient, cost-efficient timeline for how to do something like this. You know, I've been experimenting with a bunch of fancy tricks and things, and I feel like at the end of the day, it just comes down to for an e-commerce store, you could do a combination of Hero links and just outreach and paying for links, you know, on a consistent basis every month. I think that's really all you could and should be doing. Obviously, within a certain budget of what your store is making, don't like, you know, do this and like make sure you do it within when your store is already profitable with ads. Don't do SEO in an effort to make your store profitable, I would say. So yeah, I mean,
don't do SEO in an effort to make your store profitable.
Yeah, I would say if your store is not profitable with ads, you shouldn't really be investing money into links.
Right, right. Okay. Next slide. So it's Ariel Bath. They had these jetted tubs. And so these would range in price from, I think, $1,700 I saw them for, but there are even some that were like in the high 4,000s. And these had pretty good margins. But these were an example of something that, again, like, not everybody is going to buy this because of how expensive it is and how like kind of niche it is. But this was something that we were able to kind of capture a lot of specific branded search. I think they had some products that were more reasonably priced and, you know, more appealing. So they would sell better than others, but like, let me, I want to find the names of one of these.
Well, I guess I'll get another question while you're looking at that. How much should I spend on ads on starting out? I mean, it depends on your budget and like what you want to spend, but I would say 20 to 30 a day is a good starting point.
Yeah, I answered.
Oh, you did. Question. Sorry.
Yeah.
But you said it doesn't.
I said like 10 to 20 a day.
Okay. He was referring to, I don't know what that's about. Mark Walsh says, don't be mad at me and spend $5,000 on ads only to realize, don't be me and spend $5,000 on ads only to realize that I forgot to enable my store checkout. Well, at least you did something, but you spent $5,000 before realizing that there's no sales coming in.
If I'm not getting sales for a couple of days, I'm checking my checkout. I'm going through everything.
Yeah. I feel like that's one of the, the first things that like I'll do. Like if I notice a website isn't like having the results that I would expect, or like I always check stuff like that like right away.
Yeah, yeah. So sorry, this brand didn't have specific model names, I don't think, but it would be like Ariel, like 70-inch tub, or you know, there were like different. So there'd be the brand name, and the brand actually had a lot of different products. They had vanities too and stuff. So it was a bigger brand. We'll say it had some search volume, but we were able to like run text ads. If somebody was searching, you know, Ariel 70 inch tub. So like Ariel 70 tub, right? We'd pop up, we'd be able to know what they were looking for, serve them with, you know, one or two of those types of products, and then get the sales. And this was a brand I think that had a decent amount of competition, but because the margins were pretty decent and, you know, high competition usually comes in tandem with high demand, because if it's a bigger brand, a lot of people know about it, their dealer program is bigger, etc. So we were able to harness the fact that it was, you know, there was some search volume for a lot of low, a lot of long tail terms. And we were just capturing that with text ads. Bada bing, bada boom.
Toby asks, thanks for your answer, Joe, from your experience. How many total links is it getting up to your... So like domain authority is a third party metric. So are you talking about Moz or... Moz is DA, Ahrefs is DR, but either way, they're both third-party metrics. I wouldn't really like focus too much on them. I would just keep building the links consistently until you're getting the ranking results that you are seeking.
And in our video, our last video, we were showing that there's people with absolutely terrible DR ranking high for a lot of crazy terms because of how relevant their domain name is.
What was that? Was that a video or was that our new module that we added?
That was our last stream.
Oh, was it? Because we also added a module inside the course on more detail in that, or our last office hours, rather.
Our last stream, we were talking about the how to avoid the algorithm penalty by getting branded search.
Oh, yeah. That too. But I'm saying on the office hours.
We did have a specific office hours video on this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess the point is that these domain metrics aren't necessarily going to be, you know, once you hit 30 as a, what'd you call it? Domain authority, that it's just going to change everything.
Yeah. I wouldn't be putting too much stock into the third party metrics. It's just not a good thing to focus on, I would say. It doesn't necessarily equivocate. It doesn't necessarily equal the results you want all the time.
Well, yeah. How do you feel about these third party tools, Joe? Because even more recently, we've been working on a side project kind of looking at some search volume stuff and seeing that there's a big discrepancy in what these keyword tools report in search volume, even what Google reports as their search volume when you're a paying customer versus when you're not a paying customer. So
what's your overall? You know what? We should do a whole stream on that, because what's really, really interesting is that, and I don't know what the threshold is. I don't think you have to spend much, but when you start spending money with Google ads, you start to see their search volume data per each keyword, right? Like, do you know how much you have to spend to see that or no?
I never even knew that until you pointed that out. I just thought, oh, okay, they stopped giving out ranges because I was, you know, using our ad accounts to have spend. So
Yeah. So when you have a Google ad account that has spend on it, I don't know how much spend you need. I don't think it's that much. You start to see keyword volumes for terms. So usually it gives a range. Usually it'll say this keyword has 0 to 10, 10 to 100, 100 to 1,000. So it's a pretty big range typically. But when it starts giving you exact numbers, what you start to see is that the keyword volumes inside of what Google is reporting are vastly, vastly different, especially when it comes to long tail stuff. Than the third-party tools like Ahrefs. So, yeah, we were looking at this for some local terms, actually, and it was crazy, like, how different it was, how I would look at all these keywords in Ahrefs, these local keywords, and they would have no volume. Like, they wouldn't even register. And then when I throw them into Google ads, I'm seeing like 10, 30, 50, 100 more. So it is pretty, pretty interesting. And you said yourself, Mike, you said when we were like starting to go through all this, you're like, how can anyone have data that's more accurate than Google if they're all getting it from Google?
Yeah, even if they're not getting it from Google, how else are they getting it? Because it's Google's property, right? So you have no way to track what people are searching unless you're getting data from Google or you're tracking people that are using your software. But even that's going to be like a limited sample size. There's not going to be no way to extrapolate that out. Yeah. So Kim L said, what makes a great money page? Sample, please.
I mean,
you don't make a great money page? Ariel jetted tub on Shopify.
Yeah.
That's your money page.
I feel like sometimes just having a product listed that's not fancy or anything, if it's with a nice contrasted add to cart button, if it's the right product and you're serving it to the right person when they're searching for what they want to buy, that's what makes a good money page. That's really it.
Right. I'm loving that we're getting a little bit of a new audience here. Like a lot of the niche site people have found our content from, I guess, our last couple of videos. And so they're asking these questions. It's a nice switch up.
Yeah.
Just a typical,
you know, how much time we have left on this stream? Not too much. I'm wondering if we could do a little experiment and throw some keywords into the keyword tool, and compare them to Ahrefs. I am very interested to do it. If we have time, because I feel like,
we're at 47 minutes. So this is the last of the products here. So I just did our 5 products. So if you want to pull that up, you can. I don't know how you want to go about that. Berkman said, another benefit to Google Ads is you start to see branded traffic quicker compared to a trash blog site. Yeah, I mean, you're not really going to get branded traffic to a blog site because people are just searching it kind of one-off instead of, you know, you shop for something on Home Depot. Maybe you look at it and then come back later and you just search Home Depot and then, you know, click it off Google and go about your business. So, yeah. Branded search on e-commerce is just a natural byproduct of like selling something versus on a blog. You're not really selling something. You have to rely on like building an audience somehow. Joe, you know who I don't even know if they're still blogging anymore, but I wonder how they got hit with the update. Johnny FD.
Dude, that's so funny. I was just on his website.
Today?
As you said that.
No way.
I have it up right now on this site. Now.
How's that possible?
I don't know. Maybe something we said, we're like reminded.
Well, I was going to bring that up the other day, but I didn't feel like...
Well, his blog doesn't even have a lot of traffic to begin with. Like, I think he does mainly the YouTube stuff.
He was making a lot of money from his blog. I mean, he got popular through publishing his income reports. But I guess a lot of his money was coming from dropshipping. Or he was like a big affiliate.
But I think it's one of those things where people like find the blog through YouTube or podcast or something.
Well, yeah, that is an example of the branded blog, like even the Epic Gardening. That's what we showed in the previous video. Like,
well, they actually have like a content strategy. Like the Epic Gardening is different. They have like
they're both branded blogs, basically.
I guess a better example of this is like Pat Flynn.
Right.
Pat Flynn, I'm looking at his search now. Like his top keyword is Pat Flynn. That's what gets the majority of his traffic.
Yeah. Berkman said these third-party tools are a guide at best. Usually there's a pig with lipstick on them. Yeah. I mean, Joe's the SEO guy, so I can't flame these tools too much. But, I mean, we've learned a lot from using Ahrefs and kind of just playing around with these blog strategies over the years. And it teaches you different stuff, and we've applied it to our dropshipping stores, and it's paid off the most there. So,
well, yeah, I do think you should have a subscription of Ahrefs or SEMrush just for the sole purpose of seeing like the estimated traffic and keywords that other sites rank for. It's a good way to just throw in a domain and kind of see what's going on. I do think if you're going to get into SEO, you do need one of those. I got to say, Mike, we're talking all these, we are recovering niche site owners. John Dykstra is still pulling in 250K page views, but it's from Pinterest. John's been at it a long time, and he's obviously done really well for it, like for himself doing it. I just think it's hard to catch up to where he is at, even though his site has taken a hit. I think it's hard. So if you're starting now or you've just taken a hit and you have no sustainable, like you don't have a consistent, sustainable income from ads or affiliate or whatever, I wouldn't want to start now hoping to get to where John is. That's all I'm saying. I would rather start a dropshipping store where I can, make something happen within like a month, you know, and not, the thing I hate about the whole Pinterest, Google, like blogging for ad revenue. It's just like, you work so hard for 6 months to 8 months just to see any result. And then you don't know what's coming down the pipeline with any sort of algorithm changes.
Yeah. That's a real example of turning the tanker, because you're building this, you have to invest. I mean, before AI, especially, you had to invest so much into content and into links and just blood, sweat, and tears to create this website that, it's not necessarily something that's easy to do. And we've tried to implement a lot of John's methods for, I think, some of our sites with varying degrees of success.
Yeah, I mean, we still have this site, you know, we're still getting around 600 to 700 per day in ad revenue for Mediavine. My site with 250 K AI content pieces is still making 350 to 400 a day.
Right.
You know, but am I going to go and start that again? Like, it's not that easy to replicate it, because the thing is, I can replicate that. That's the difference, is I can replicate a dropshipping store. I could start one dropshipping store and then start another and know that if I do these similar steps, I'm going to have a similar result. With the blog, it, like I told you before, I could throw 250K pieces of AI content on one site, have it do amazing, do the same thing on another site, and have it totally flop. So that's kind of the difference that I don't really enjoy about it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, you know, shout out John Dykstra, but...
John's the reason we started Build Assets Online, actually.
Yes. Yes, he is. So, you know, I can't, cause like what he does works, clearly it works for him, and his, what he's done has been successful. But I think really for us, it's been about finding a formula that's just going to be very repeatable, so we can create kind of a portfolio of these sites. I think, you know, the best way to create a portfolio of sites is by monetizing it with a high ticket product that you drop ship. Okay. Because you can run ads, and by running ads, you can get things up quickly. You can scale them up. You can scale them down. You're not waiting 6 months just for Google to, you know, rank you. You're a lot more free. So buildassetsonline.com. Shout out to John Dykstra.
We got to change our homepage on Build Assets Online. It's pretty trash.
I thought you were doing that.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
Do you think we get any branded search just from people literally typing that in?
We do, definitely. Oh, like by accident? Like,
yeah.
Well, I don't know about by accident. Let me check Let me check Google. Let me check the Google Keyword Planner. Apparently, build assets online, we get around 50 average searches a month.
I'm saying, I wonder how much of that is people that don't know that we exist that are just trying to build assets online, you know?
I mean, I don't know.
You have to look at the keyword trend over time, I guess.
Yeah.
Toby said, if you're trying to rank a specific collection page, do you push links to your domain or to the collection page? The store is zero domain authority.
So I've been experimenting. I built a lot of links to a collection page recently, and I am noticing some results in terms of getting it bumped up. But I think what I'm going to do more going forward is I'm going to kind of just analyze how many links my competitors have to those collection pages, because I'm thinking that I don't want to overdo it. Like if a competitor has, like if none of the other pages, the ranking collection pages have any links, it might be better just to build to the supporting pages and then push the juice up to the collection page to make it look more natural. But that's not what I've been doing, but I think that's going to be my approach going forward.
Cool. Berkman said you can see what other web pages rank for inside of Google Ads by searching their URL.
Yeah, I'm looking for that right now, actually. I've think I've seen that before.
I don't know what he's referring to. Like, you can plug a URL into the keyword planner and then it'll show you like different terms and their volumes. I don't know if that's necessarily indicating that they're ranking for all of them. Like, I feel like Ahrefs is a better tool for, all right, you plug in a domain, it's going to show you all the things that they're ranking organically for and the position and stuff like that. I don't think Google really does that well, unless you know something I don't, Berkman.
I'm going to try it. I'm going to look at the entire site of something and see what happens.
Okay. Dan Stockdale said, anyone have Bing ads experience? I've gotten my store to 40K revenue a month, but I signed up for Bing. It was instantly banned without running a single ad, and my niche is in high risk. 40K from Google Ads and SEO. I mean, number one, good job, Dan, because getting to that point with Google Ads and SEO alone, I wouldn't be too caught up in Bing ads. I'm trying to think about, like, if we've used Bing ads for all of our stores. I'm not sure if the store that we sold for $650,000 even had Bing ads on it. The point I'm trying to make is, if you got to 40K with Google ads, I don't think you need Bing ads. So I don't really have experience if you got suspended. I mean, some people in our program have had some Bing ad suspensions. I don't know if they've gotten around it or what. But yeah, it seems like, I mean, we've made videos about Bing ads and how I don't like them because they just, there's no rhyme or reason for their ad platform, for what they do. They're just bad. So I don't have much advice for you, but I would say my advice is to just keep pressing on your Google ads. How much are you spending on Google ads to get this revenue? Let me know. And Dan said he pushes links directly to the collection page and content on top part of the collection page to help with indexation and then build lots of supporting pages and links directly to those collections. Dan seems to know what he's doing. Got some experience. Porta Deals said, it seems like one message got sent before the other, but I'll just go in the order in which I received it. He said, but at least I control my store. Shopify terminated my account and refused to switch it on back again or even explain to me a reason. In my opinion, there is no serious reason. It was in a time when I was preparing a demo store, so I didn't even finish the store or add domain yet. After reading hundreds of similar stories online, it seems that trusting Shopify might be a very disappointing surprise one day. Do you or your students experience that? I've never heard of this. So I'd be interested to see what they said. And I'm wondering, are you a U.S. citizen making a U.S. store? Are you not from the U.S. trying to make a U.S. store? Any detail like that I feel could be helpful, but there's always WooCommerce. There's other platforms as well. You don't have to use Shopify too. So that's also another important point for, you know, like dropshipping. You're not, yes, we rely on Google very heavily. Obviously we're paying them, so they have more interest to kind of show us and keep us alive. But at the end of the day, yeah, you can use Bing if Google gives you a problem. You can use WooCommerce if Shopify gives you a problem. If Shopify Payments gives you a problem, you can use Stripe. There's other options versus just making a blog that's just totally reliant on one traffic method handed out by one company.
You know what's funny is that two of our best students, one of them was banned from Shopify Payments. I ended up using authorized.net. He ended up selling his store for like over 500K. Another one, when he first started, had for some stupid reason, this was like 4 years ago, had his Shopify account complete, like his store shut down via Shopify. And then now I mean, I don't know if I want to say their names out of the gate, but
this is for, I know the person that sold their store that had to use authorized.net, but
this was someone we had on the show pretty recently. I don't know if you remember, but back 4 years ago when our store was on Teachable, he sent us an email that he got his store, like they shut down his Shopify store for virtually no reason, like after his first order or something.
What does his first name start with?
I'll just type it to you.
Okay, just tell me. Yeah, because I have no idea what you're talking about. Dan said he's spending between 4.5 to 6K a month on ads. I mean, if you're doing 40K in revenue, I'd say before you start spending more money on ads, something is wrong here. Because you should be doing at least a 10X return on ad spend. So to spend, I mean, 4.5, okay, you're kind of right at the edge. But like 6.5K to do 40K in revenue, are you even making money? So before you get started on Bing ads, you have to figure out where things are going right inside your Google ads or things are going wrong. And especially if you're getting SEO traffic, because that has to be contributing in some way. And it would only be a benefit, like added revenue, that you're going to get from organic traffic. So it seems to me like your ads are problematic, but it's better to have this problem, be at 40K in sales and, you know, be teetering on the edge of profitability or like, you know, a little bit profitable versus not running ads at all.
Look at the message I sent you. I do think it's pretty funny how two of our best students over the years have experienced.
Oh, I didn't know about this, Joe.
Yeah, you knew about it. Okay. We've talked about it.
Then I forgot. I don't know.
But you know, I just pulled up the old email as well. This is from 2019. Yeah. I do feel like it's kind of funny how two of our best students have been banned by Shopify Payments, banned from Shopify, and still managed to have lots and lots and lots of success. I think it just goes to show the difference between someone that's going to be successful at this kind of business and someone that's not. Because some people, all they see is these roadblocks and barriers before the barriers even occur. But the ones that are successful, they just do stuff, they run into the barriers, and then they just go through the barriers and come out the other side.
That's the mindset difference. Somebody that's just focusing on advancing forward, and when they come to something, all right, how do I get through this? Versus somebody that's trying to anticipate every little thing that's going to happen, and then they get stuck because it's paralyzing to try and think about all the problems that you can encounter.
Yeah.
So maybe let's call it here. I'll say this last thing. Harry Rollerson said, I have a demo store that terminated in the past. It was due to photos I had used. May have been the reason if the demo products were not copyright-free photos. See? A lot of things. Shout out Harry. All right, y'all. Buildassetsonline.com. Ignore the homepage. You can schedule a free strategy call. And if you have a failed blog site, if you're not sure how to do niche selection, if you know, have any of these pressing questions, can work with the experts.
Yeah, we gotta do something about this homepage.
I leave that to you, Joe, because
I don't even know what to do with it.
I don't even know how to use WordPress.
Yeah,
let's hire a website designer.
Yeah, no, I don't even
get some
know
traffic graphs. Make it look like what they put on Twitter, you know.
I kind of want to make it simple, but yeah, we'll figure something out.
Anyway, guys, thank you for coming along. Buildassetsonline.com. You can take it or leave it, but as always, take it easy.
Take it easy.